You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Locked On Jets podcast on this Thursday, May 17th, 2018. I, of course, am John B. from GangreneNation.com, your host. As always, if you enjoy this show, think about subscribing to it on either iTunes or Spotify. We can deliver the show to your device each morning, so you'll just take it and play it whenever you feel like. And if you do enjoy this show, leave it a positive review in iTunes. Certainly helps us out. It's Thursday, which is our mailbag day on this show, so let's jump right into the questions left to us in both my email and gangrenenation.com. Our first question deals with franchise quarterbacks. The term gets thrown around a lot, but really, how do you define a franchise quarterback? Is it someone that falls into an elite tier a la Matt Ryan or Aaron Rodgers? Is it someone who's fringe top 10 who gives you a fighting chance but needs a good team around them to win games like Matt Stafford? Is it someone in the tier of Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota? What tier of play does Darnold need to reach to earn the title of franchise quarterback? Well, I'll start off by saying that it is a subjective term, and it gets thrown around a lot in a lot of different contexts, and you know everybody's got their own little definition of it, so it does get to be a little tricky to define, because one person may say top five, another may say top 10. And even, you know, the players you named, like somebody may argue Matt Stafford's in the same level as Matt Ryan, or so it's very difficult. It's very subjective. What would I call a franchise quarterback? The way I view it, you as a quarterback are either somebody who lifts your team up, makes them better, or you're a product of your surroundings. So that's the way I kind of view it. You know, I think of Mark Sanchez back early in his career when the team was successful around because they had the run game, they had the offensive line, they had the great defense. And in 2012, when things started falling apart from in 2011, but when things really, the wheels really fell off in 2012, the thing I always heard was, well, the team around them isn't as good. Well, they don't have receivers. Well, this and that. Well, I think the point there was that the second he started having to carry, he needed to start carrying the load, he couldn't do it. When early in his career, he had everything around him working, the team was successful. He didn't really have to do a lot. The second things started falling on his shoulders to carry, he was not capable of doing so. So the question is, do you lift your team up, or are you a product of your surroundings? You know, you think about the great quarterbacks in this league, the Rodgers, the Brady, the Roethlisberger, the Breeze, the Matt Ryan, guys of that nature, they make their teams better. If a receiver's not open, they find a way to throw the guy open. You know, they throw with anticipation, they throw back shoulder. They just figure out ways to lift their team up. The offensive line around them is crumbling. They're able to move within the pocket to buy themselves a little extra time. You don't necessarily need to be a great scrambler. You don't need to be a guy who posts a couple, you know, you don't need to have 500 rushing yards in the season to have the necessary mobility. Really what you need in the NFL is to be mobile within the pocket, be able to read the rush, be able to set the protection properly. You know, a lot of breakdowns that get blamed on the offensive line are partially the quarterback's fault because he identified the wrong guys who were blitzing. He has the offensive line blocking guys who weren't blitzing, whereas guys who were blitzing come on blocked. So those are some of the things that I look for. I guess if we want to be broad and overly general, and I think this is overly general, a franchise quarterback, what I want in a franchise quarterback, no matter what, I feel like my team's not going to be picking top five because he's going to go out there and just win me a couple games. So even if I have a terrible roster around him, he's going to be so good in a couple games that we're going to win, you know, we're going to win a handful and we won't be drafting top five. If I have a semi-decent roster, I want to be a team that can make the playoffs. You know, some years I'm not going to do it. I may fall a game short, but if I have a functional roster around him, I want to make the playoffs. If I got a decent roster around him, you know, a decent solid roster, I want to be a Super Bowl contender. So that's kind of the way I view it. I know that might be overly general. And, you know, the poster boy right now for somebody who's not a franchise quarterback is Blake Bortles. And the reason I say that is, you know, he's getting all this love because he's the, you know, the typical unproductive quarterback on a good team. So now there's always the thought process, well, how bad can he be if his team's so successful? Well, the thing about that is, isn't it ironic that the second the team around him got good, second, the surroundings around him got so good where he suddenly got the best defense in the league and magically he turned into a quote-unquote functional quarterback? And he was also given, and it was also, this also happened at the same time his team drafted a really good running back early. I mean, isn't that ironic? Bortles is the type of guy you cannot win with unless everything around him is elite. Everything around him is top-notch. That's not a franchise quarterback. What a franchise quarterback is somebody who can deal with some adversity. Now, you don't want to give him just a terrible roster. You're not going to win with that. Now, you're also not going to have the number one overall pick. You're not going to be the worst team in the league because he will win you some games on his own. But, you know, you obviously don't want to give him nothing to work with. I mean, even the greatest quarterbacks, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, if you look at some games where his offensive line's been in shambles, you know, when Packers have suffered some injuries to key players, I mean, he's had some rough times, but he's also had some great moments. So I guess what it comes down to is, are you a guy who's lifting up players around you? Are you a guy who's making everybody else around you better? Or are you a product of your surroundings? Are you a Mark Sanchez or a Blake Bortles where when everything's around you, your team's going to win, but if everything's great, everything around you is not great, your team's not really going to be successful. Now, as far as what are the odds of us, you know, what are the odds Sam Darnold can do this? I mean, he's a top three pick, so I would think pretty good. You would hope pretty good. But I think Darnold needs to be a guy who lifts the team around him. So, I don't know where I draw the, I would say, you know, the guys you named, Matt Ryan, obviously, yes. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, yes. Matt Stafford, I'd say yes. I'd say Kirk Cousins, no. Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota, no right now. Both have shown promise. Both stalled a little bit in their developments, so we'll see what comes from them. But I think both of them have potential. Kirk Cousins is not a guy who I think of. I don't think he lifts the team up. I think he's a guy who's more of a product of his surroundings. He's not, and that's one of the reasons I was very hesitant to give him the money he was seeking. I'm not sure that Kirk Cousins is a $30 million player because I don't see a guy who's a difference. I don't see him making big time throws, you know, throwing, hitting receivers with pinpoint precision when there's minimal window to hit. So I think you'd want a guy who's an upper echelon player, a guy, again, who carries a team, who can carry the load, who makes his teammates better. Our next question, Mac versus Bulls. In the Sports Illustrated article, they revealed a general manager in a front office that performed at a high level planning for the 2018 draft. I do not get the same sense regarding the coaching staff, cycling through three offensive coordinators in 3 years, hiring the defensive coordinator's son for a tryout at a defensive position. Nepotism is a big red flag. Some argue that McCagnan and Bowles are joined at the hip and will either be extended or fired at the same time. Isn't it time to start making distinctions between the two? Now, the Sports Illustrated article in reference was written by Albert Breer, published this week, and it's not a good article. It's a great article. You should read the article. I mean, heck, I don't do this much. You have my permission to put this podcast on pause right now and go to Sports Illustrated and read this article Albert Breer wrote. It essentially fills you in of the 3 years worth of developments that led the Jets to get Sam Darnold. It takes you through the Jets' history scouting him, what some of the key people thought. The Jets really kind of gave Albert Breer all of the details on the process scouting Sam Darnold over multiple years. It really an incredible read. It shows you great insight into the organization, and you come away from it really impressed by the front. I came away from it really impressed by the job the front office did in gaining Sam Darnold. You look at the thoroughness, the way they outflanked Buffalo trying to trade up, the attention they paid to the quarterbacks this year. And one of the things that the article states is that because the Jets focus so much on the quarterbacks, they were able to get their board done early when it came to the position. And they were able to say, you know what, we feel comfortable with three guys. They felt comfortable with Darnold, Rosen, and Mayfield. We're going to trade up. And you get the feeling from what they said is that because they did their work early, other teams were playing catch up, and they may not have been at a point where they knew whether they would feel comfortable trading up to three because they weren't sure if they would have three quarterbacks, the other teams. So the Jets were ready. The other teams weren't. And that's kind of what the article stresses. And obviously the Jets ended up with Sam Darnold, which, you know, who knows? I mean, we can never say with 100% certainty before a guy sets foot on the field, but a guy who's very highly regarded, and I think with good reason. Now, as far as the question goes, I don't think that there should be a distinction at this point in time. To me, there should be a distinction if either the coaching is just doing a great job and getting no talent, or the general manager is putting a great talent on the field and coaching is not getting results. Now, you know, Listen, you give the front office credit when they do a good job, but you also have to give them grief when they don't do a good job. And this was, excellent job with Darnold. Really important move. Full credit. But that's not the only thing this front office has done. This front office has been here 3 years. Yeah, they have 3 years worth of work under the resume. And let's be honest, there's a lot that's not good. It's more bad than good at this point for this front office. Now, you hope that this is a turning point. So perhaps it is. But that's getting the quarterback's only part of the job. It's an essential part of the job, but it's only part of the job. Now you have to surround the quarterback with a good supporting cast. And I'm not sure you've seen that yet. I'm not sure Darnold's going out there with a great supporting cast this year. This is a team that's still not expected to be great in the short run. Now, you build a team around Darnold in the long run, you could be onto something special. But that's where that work still has to be done. And you look at, what year did the Jets really underachieve? You can argue 2016, but even then a lot of the players were kind of old. Like, a lot of the guys who they were counting on kind of just fell off the face of the earth. You look at 2015, they won 10 games. Yeah, they missed the playoffs. 10 games is a solid season. Last year, they were expected to be the worst team in the league by many people. One of the worst teams in the league. They go 5-11, so somewhere between doing what they expected, maybe a little bit better, maybe performing it a little bit. But I don't really think that the talent on this roster dictates that this team should have been better over these 3 years. I think they've more or less played to their talent level, and the talent level for the most part has not been great. This front office has not done a great job putting players on the field. A lot of moves have backfired. The drafting is up and down so far. I don't think this front office has the track record where you can say, well, they deserve more time than the coaching staff. I think the front office is still very much the jury's still very much out on this front office at this point in time. And I understand what you're saying, and I don't think the coaching staff has done a great job, but this is not the only, you can't just judge this front office on this one move. Doesn't eliminate all the other missteps. There still have to be, this team actually has to be successful. This team, you have to feel like they're putting a good team on the field and the coaching staff's underachieving. And, you want to talk about, now, defensive coordinator Casey Rogers, his son is actually on the roster right now. Well, who signed him? It wasn't the coaches, the front office signed him. It wasn't the coaching staff doesn't make signings. It's the front office that does. So the front office bought into that idea. So you could get, and I'm not saying that you, the person who asked this is necessarily, I'm not saying this is you, if you're the guy who sent this question in, but I get the feeling that whenever something good happens with this fan base, the front office seems to be given credit. And when something bad happens, it's laid at the feet of the coaching staff in many instances. And that's just a feeling I've gotten. I think it's just because Mike Maccagnan's been better at dealing with the media than Todd Bowles. Bowles does not do a good job presenting his case to the media. And I think that turns a lot of people off. I think, people who might be inclined to give him more patience, more leeway, might be turned off a little bit because Bowles is not great. He's not a dynamic speaker. He frequently just says stuff that doesn't make sense. He doesn't like to show his cards to the media, so frequently he'll say stuff that just flat out isn't true. And I think people mistake that. People take that for Bowles not knowing what he's talking about, not being engaged. So I think part of it's just the way he presents himself to the media. But I think that it's not a case where you can really say the front office is light years ahead of the coach. Now, the front office starts making more moves like the Darnold trade. I'm not saying we can't get there. We might get to a point where the GM's doing a good job and the coaching, there needs to be a change of coach. I don't think we're there at this point in time, though. Next question. Are there any clear candidates to go opposite of Jordan Jenkins as an edge rusher? Anyone that would be considered developing talent that you think can grab the reins this year? Please don't say Josh Martin. Well, I wouldn't say Josh Martin's developing because he's been in, he doesn't really have a lot of upside left. He's been in the league long enough where I think he is what he is. Who's going to be aside from Jenkins? Well, I'm afraid to tell you, and you asked me not to say Josh Martin, but Josh Martin's got the most snaps of any returning edge rusher other than Jenkins. He was the guy who got the most playing time last year. And, you want another guy, it's probably going to be David Bass, another guy with no upside. I mean, you're talking about guys who are frankly lucky to be on NFL rosters who are going to be seeing a lot of playing time. There's just not a lot of intriguing talent there. You hope maybe Maldon puts it together. But aside from that, I mean, I don't really know where you can go. This is just something that has not been addressed yet and something that's going to have to be addressed in the future. But for 2018, I'm not sure the Jets are going to have good players in that spot, and it's going to hold this defense back, because this is not a defense that's really got total lockdown corners. It's got guys who are okay. I mean, it's not as bad as it was a year ago at corner, but it's not like it's a great group of corners. This is not the number one group of corners in the league. It's not the number two group of corners in the league. It's a decent group of corners. It could be a decent group of corners, but it's not going to be able to make up for lack of an edge rush. And it's tough to see where the pass rush comes from. It's tough to see who produces that edge rusher, because the Jets just don't. It's not just that they don't have anybody proven there. It's that I don't see a lot of people there with a whole lot of upside. So your guess is as good as mine, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to give you news you don't want. It's probably going to be Josh Martin, and maybe David Bass fills in from him, which is not much better. So it's kind of a negative answer for the question, but that's a spot. Ask me a quarterback again, because I really like Sam Darnold, and I think the Jets are on this upswing with Darnold at quarterback, but in the short run edge rusher, I don't love that.
Next question, Jamal Adams. Does he need to tone it down on Twitter when it comes to Jets-related things, like trying to get every free agent he likes to come to the Jets on Twitter? Yeah, Adams is a very active tweeter. And what I would say is I think Jamal probably does not have a future as a general manager in the NFL if you look at some of the guys he wants to bring to the Jets. I mean, some of these recruitment pitches he's had are a bit head-scratching. Do you really want that guy? I also think Jamal does not have a history. He does not have a future as a uniform designer in the NFL. If you look at the monstrosities that he wants the Jets to change their uniform design to, does he need to tone it down? I mean, some of the stuff, he tweets a lot. He talks a lot about how the Jets are disrespected, and well, the team was 5-11 last year. They were one of the worst teams in the league. Go out and win games if you want respect. You go out, you go 11-5 instead of 5-11, you'll get plenty of respect. But no, what Adam, all that's fine. I mean, again, I don't think he's a uniform. I don't think he has a history as designing uniforms in the NFL. I don't think he has a future designing uniforms in the NFL. I don't think he has a future as a GM. But none of this matters if he goes out and plays great. He's got the potential to be one of the top safeties in the NFL. That's why he went 6th overall. If he goes out there and is one of the top safeties in the league, if he becomes a difference maker in the defensive backfield, none of this matters. It's fine. Nobody cares what you tweet in the NFL as long as you go out there and play well on Sunday. So he's got to grow into one of the best safeties in the league, and everything will take care of itself from that point. And none of this will matter. I mean, I don't think anybody cares what you tweet. And I think he's just very passionate about the Jets. He's excited to be here. He's excited about the future of the team. So I think that's where, that's where these tweets come from. So I don't have a problem with them. I disagree with plenty of them, but I don't really have a big problem with any of that. And our last question, is McCown worth the money he's paid if he's mostly on the bench this year? I know as a player, the clear answer is no. I know you're not huge into the idea of a veteran mentor. But that said, even if he just makes a small difference in Darnold's development, can you put a price on finding and successfully developing a young quarterback? Well, yes, you can. Now, let me ask you this. I'll answer with your question with a question. Go through the entire NFL. Okay, go through NFL coaching staffs. Tell me if you can find a quarterback's coach, a position coach, with a $10 million salary. And I mean, is there a quarterback's coach? And a quarterback's coach, those are position coaches. Those are guys who work they work closest with the quarterback. They work exclusively with the quarterbacks. The best guy, tell me, does that guy get a $10 million salary? Heck, let me give you this little tidbit. Bill Belichick, $7.5 million salary. So is McCown worth that money? No. And yes, you can put a price on this stuff. The league puts a price on this stuff. If McCown doesn't play this year, that's not a good use of $10 million. He could have been brought. Look, we know he's near the end of his career, and he suggested that he could be interested in coaching. He could have been brought back as a member of the coaching staff, most likely. So, and you'd pay him less than $10 million. Now, in the grand scheme of things, is this a huge deal? No, it's not, because the Jets, you know, McCown's not breaking the Jets' long-term cap again. It's a one-year deal. It's a lot like the Ryan Fitzpatrick deal. You know, as crazy as everybody goes about that, it was not money well spent, but ultimately it was just a one-year deal. Now, that said, I mean, the player's either worth the money he's getting or he's not. It doesn't, you know, regardless of the team's cap situation, the player's either worth the money or he's not. At $10 million, I don't think McCown's really worth it if he's not playing, but that's just something you'll have to live with, and it's something the Jets will live with if McCown doesn't play. And honestly, I think the Jets probably hope that's something they live with, because that means Darnold has taken the starting job and has run with it, so it would be a nice problem to have in a way. That'll do it for our show. Thank you for listening today. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe. You can do it on iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Enjoy your Thursday. We will be back tomorrow to close out the week.